All right, I'm Flex Pavilion.
Hello, this is Andrew W.K.
Yo, 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 it's Miles from Slack Stupid.
This is Ali.
This is Nick from Chuk Chuk Chuk.
What's up, guys? This is the Chain Smoker. Is the name of school from Ghost?
This is Beefcake the Mighty from Guar.
Hey, folks, we're Royal Blood.
And you're currently listening to Sound Sessions.
Sound Sessions. Sound Sessions.
Sound what?
Sound Sessions.
We're listening to the sweet sounds of Sound Sessions. Thank you.
Hey, this is Christian from L-Town 11, and you're listening to Sound Sessions.
And welcome back to another episode of Sound Sessions. As always, I am Kevin.
And I am Mike. What's going on, Kevin?
Michael, I am so thrilled to have, I don't even know what to call these guys exactly, but we'll just call them a rockin' two-piece, which you don't see too often. We're joined by Christian Dunn of L1011.
How's it going? I like rockin' two-piece. That's good. I'll take it.
Yeah, keep it simple, you know? So we're having them on. They're coming around next week. They're going to be at Space in Evanston on Wednesday, February 17th. So let's talk about that. You're a two-piece. You don't see that too often. How did that come about?
Well, when we first formed the band, I figured there would probably be another member or two. And my drummer suggested I check out a looping pedal. And I didn't know what a looping pedal was, but I found out pretty quickly. And for those of you who don't know, it's a little pedal that sits on the ground, and you step on it, and it starts recording. And then you step on it again, and it plays backwards. Recorded, to put it simply. So we experimented with that at one of our very first band practices, just me and my drummer. I'm a bass player, by the way. And it was really exciting to us. We thought, wow, what if we could just be a two-piece? How cool would that be? How easy would it be to schedule band practice? So from that moment forward, we were really determined to have it just be the two of us. And here we are 13 years later, I think
wow.
It is. And things are going really well. So I'm glad that he knew what a looper pedal was, because it really changed our life.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, full disclosure, I'm a bass player myself, and I get into pedals and loop pedals and gear and everything. So watching and listening to you guys is a real treat for me. Let's talk about that. We have talked to some bands before that are not very open about disclosing what's in their rig and what's in their pedal board and this and that. And I see you're posting videos on Facebook and all that just you're just total full disclosure. So you're okay talking about that, huh?
Yeah, it was kind of the opposite, because when we first got started, people would come up to us afterwards and say, well, so you have tracks, right? Like you have a laptop or something hidden. And I said, no, we did everything live. Everything you heard, we did live. And they'd kind of look at me like I was lying. I said, no, really, it's us doing it all live. And so in the early years, so to speak, we were kind of on a mission to prove ourselves and to prove to everyone that everything you hear on our records is pretty much what you hear live, and it's just the two of us who do it. We don't have any click tracks or anything, pre-recorded. And so that's why we've always been an open book about that stuff, or one of the reasons. Plus, I think, if somebody's inspired by what we do, why not let them know what it is, what kind of equipment we're using, and if they can come up with something even better than what we do,
that's
with
so
that
cool.
Equipment, great.
Yeah,
the world is a better place,
That's so cool. Yeah, and it's really remarkable, because there's times, I'd swear you're using a synthesizer up there, but it's your guitar, it's your bass. Or
oh, yeah. That's another thing. From early on, we decided not to have keyboards at all, so everything you hear is me or my drummer. And my drummer plays electronic drums, so some of those electronic drums might sound like a drum machine or something, but he's actually playing them. And then I use a bunch of effects that really do make it sound like a keyboard. But it's just me. It's just bass.
Yeah, it's incredible. So can you touch on a little bit, too? You mentioned, in the early years, I don't want to say your motivation or your purpose was just proving people that it was just you guys, but you kind of had a different sound earlier on than you do now. Like, beginning, it was maybe almost post-rock, then you fast forward to now, and you kind of have that same, feel-good vibe to you guys, but it's not, I wouldn't really put it in that post-rock genre.
Right. Yeah, I agree. It's just, we've been together for so long, our tastes have changed, not only
sure. What
we play, but what we listen to. So, it's just, you guys or anybody listening to this, if you think, what was I listening to 13 years ago? It's probably not wildly different than what you're listening to now, but it probably is a bit different. So we're the same. And as we're writing and moving forward, one of the things that on this last record we did, now that I told you all about kind of proving ourselves in the early years and all that,
on this last record, we decided we weren't going to worry too much about how we were going to do the songs live.
That's Fast Forward, is that correct? Fast Forward is the album?
Fast Forward, right.
Yeah, cool.
And some of the songs on there, like how you hear them on the record, is really how we do it live. And others, we kind of mix them up a little bit because the way we did it on the record, there'd be, you know, three parts of mine that would all come in at once. And I've only got two arms and 2 feet, so I have to do it a little bit differently live. So that's something that's changed, too.
You know, your live show seems explosive. I love the fact that you guys, you know, tie yourselves together to the sound and how great it sounds. It doesn't sound like a two-piece band, to be honest.
Yeah, it's remarkable.
So what can the audiences here in Chicago and elsewhere really expect from the L1011 show?
Well, what you just said is a comment I get a lot from people after the show who hadn't seen us before but did like the band and listen to us. They said, I couldn't believe it was a two-piece. I thought it was a four-piece band or a five-piece band or something.
Yeah.
So there's that. So I think for even if people aren't particularly into our style of music, they seem to enjoy our shows just because of the tightrope walking act that it is, if that makes any sense. You know,
oh, yeah.
You guys putting this all together in front of your eyes and hopefully not screwing up, though sometimes we do, and that's part of the fun. But then the music itself is it's pretty dancey, actually, live. A lot of people say it was way more of a emotional dance-a-thon than they were expecting. So I guess we're kind of beat-heavy live.
That's a great thing to be. Is there anything better than dancing at a concert?
No.
For me, there is. I mean, when I go to a show, if I'm really moved by whoever's on stage, I'll be moving my body a lot, unless I'm, you know, really technically curious what they're doing up there, and then I'm focusing, and I've got my eyebrows, and I'm like, what are they doing up there? You know, that kind of thing. Right. We get that too at our show.
Yeah, so speaking on that, what's the last really good show you've been to that you've kind of gotten into and danced a little bit at the show?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, we actually were just on tour with a band called Lotus. I guess I would describe them as a jam band, but that's a little bit of a limiting description, but they're really, really good, and you know, a little bit more in the jam world than is particularly my taste.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of moments where I had to watch really closely as my head was bobbing up and down. And I think, God, this is really good. And I'm curious how they're doing this because they're a more normal five-piece band, but they have microphones. Each of them has a microphone that just goes to their in-ears so they can communicate with each other on stage. And the one will say into the microphone, all right, we're going to go to G minor here. Ready? Here we go. And then they all go to G minor.
Huh.
It's a pretty cool way to do it. Like,
that's remarkable.
I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool.
So you mentioned, you know, the tightrope act and your screw-ups that you might have every once in a while you might have live. As a musician myself, I've lived that life. I know that every once in a while a connection goes bad with wires or a pedal craps out on you or whatever. Has anything like that ever happened to you, you know, in a live setting?
Oh, yeah. We've just gotten better at hiding it and better at dealing with it over the years. In fact, just a few nights ago when we were with Lotus, I think we were in Boston, which is one of the biggest shows of the tour. We walked out, like, oh, you know, the people kind of cheer. We walk on stage. Here we go. And we start into the first song, and my drummer's electronic drums just disappeared. They just died.
Oh, no.
And so I'm up there by myself playing the song without any drums, like, okay, this is an interesting version of this song. And a couple of the guys from our crew and my drummer are running around, you know, checking the chords to my, because his electronic drums go into my looping pedal because I loop him too. So we're checking the connection there, checking. And I was like, I'm the only guy playing. All right, this is pretty bad. Let's see what we can do with this. So we kind of had to stop in the middle of the first song. And I told the audience what was happening. I said, well, why don't I improvise something? Why don't you guys give me a key? Huh. People started yelling out. I think it ended up being a pretty tough key, too. It was F sharp minor or something.
Oh, geez.
Said, all right, so this one's going to be called Boston in F sharp minor. And I just improvised a little bass solo while the guys were trying to sort out what was going on.
That's pretty cool, though.
Thankfully, they got it working, and we were back up and running again. But it's just, you know, the wind comes out of the sails when that happens. But
sure.
You just got to carry on. The show must go on, as they say.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about, do you guys play to a metronome? Or, I mean, because it's tough keeping your loops spot on to the metronome. How do you guys do that?
We just were determined from the very, very, very beginning to do this. And we didn't have a metronome. We didn't have a click or anything. We didn't really know how that would work, how we would use one. So we just practiced and practiced and practiced until our timing got really good. And at the beginning, there were a lot of train wrecks live. Like, we would literally have to stop the song and then start it again. But we just kept playing and playing and playing and touring and touring and touring until we got good at it. I mean, like anything else in life, if you just keep pounding away at it, you know, sure. Eventually you get your 10,000 hours in, and you're probably going to be good at it unless there's just no hope for you. You just aren't naturally good at it. But for us, we finally pulled it together after just continuing to bang it out and sometimes being really, really embarrassed in front of crowds of people.
That really speaks soundly to the fact that you guys have been around for so long and you guys keep pushing on forward. Where do you guys see the band going in the next 5 years or so?
Well, the next step is we're going to do some EPs where we have guest vocalists.
And, right on.
Wow, that's cool, man.
Yeah, it's interesting because we started this interview and I was explaining to you how we were so excited to just be a two-piece. But now, and we still are. We'll always be a two-piece, but we're going to have guests who we're going to collaborate with. And we've started that process. We've got a bunch of songs in varying degrees of completion with a couple different singers. And we're hoping to have an EP out by the end of the summer if we're lucky, but definitely by the beginning of next year. Then you'll see us touring on that. And then we've got some other stuff in the works, too, but that's what's coming up next.
Are you able to or willing to reveal any of who the guest vocalists will be?
Oh, sure. So one of them is a singer you probably haven't heard of. She's obviously a female singer from Norway named Zia. And then we have a male singer who used to be in a band called The Globes. His name is Eric Walters. And The Globes were a support act for us a few years ago. And they were phenomenal. They broke up, and he's now in a band called Silver Torches. And we approached him because he's just a remarkably good singer and lyricist and musician, and he was all gung-ho about it. So what's probably going to happen, we think, is that the record with him will probably get finished first, and then we'll do some touring, and we'll have his band be the support band, and we'll all go out together, and then he'll jump on stage each night and, you know, sing three songs with us or something like that.
Right on. Yeah, there's something wrong with sharing the love and, you know, just getting a few guys and girls into the band. Now, I noticed that you guys do some Indiegogo campaigns with your albums. So do you guys see using that kind of that platform for any more of your albums that are going to be coming out? Or is it just going to be all DIY?
I don't know. You know, we'll see. We're talking to some labels about partnering up for this vocal EP. So If we went that route, we probably wouldn't do an Indiegogo thing. Indiegogo is really great. But it is a little bit of a pain because, you know, we promise people that they're going to get vinyl, for example, and vinyl takes so long to make because there's only a few plants around still doing it, and there's an enormous amount of demand. So we felt bad. You know, people gave us their money, and then it took, you know, 8 months for them to get their vinyl or whatever it was. So we're a little bit hesitant about that because we just care about our fans, and we don't want them to be sitting there waiting after having given us their hard-earned money. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, if we do it again, we'll have to say something like, all right, if you buy this vinyl, just know you might not see it for a year, and we're really sorry about that or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that happens. I mean, vinyl is a very hard thing to do. We actually had an episode a few months ago where we were talking about the vinyl resurgence, and right. we were saying, is it kind of just like a thing you can hang on your wall, or are people actually getting back into it, and is it for the love of the artist, or what's it going to come to? Now, do you see the vinyl still making the comeback, or what's the best way you like to press your music on? Is it all digital for you, or are you leaning more towards that thing you can hold in your hand and cherish and tell your friends about?
Well, I think, I mean, for me personally, I pretty much just listen to music streaming. I use Spotify. Every once in a while when I'm at home, I have my record player and I have my vinyl, and I pull out a vinyl and I put it on, and it's fun and I like it. And I like holding the artwork. But man, streaming is just so convenient. My
totally.
God, I mean, you
so
can
easy.
Have
totally.
The entire history of recorded music in your hand. That's just unbelievable.
Truly.
So it's hard to turn away from that. But I do like vinyl, and it seems like our fans do as well. And I think it's probably a combination of all those things you just mentioned. I don't know. I just know that the demand is there, so we're delivering it. And there's, believe it or not, there's still a demand for CDs, which is kind of astonishing to me. But some people still like CDs, particularly people in Japan, which is another
interesting subject. But we still make CDs. Like, every time we have a new record, we think, gosh, should we bother? And sure enough, people buy them. It's, I keep thinking, man, you don't know about Spotify? Yeah, buy my CD.
Right. Well, because I think half the reason is, Kevin, tell me if I'm wrong here, but you want to go to, if you see a good show, you want to go into the merch table,
yeah,
and say hi to,
sure,
say hi to the artist, and then you want to purchase that album right from them.
That is absolutely a big part of it, wanting a souvenir from the show, and especially if we're around, you know, and people want us to sign something. So I think you're right. I think that is a big part of it.
Sure.
But we also do a fair amount of business selling CDs, you know, on our website. And that, obviously, if someone buys it there, they don't get to have it signed by us. So
right,
they're just buying it because they want a CD, which is cool, but not something I do anymore.
So I want to address this, and I feel like you kind of answered this earlier in the interview, but I know you play both bass and guitar, and you also have credits in some films as a composer. As a musician, what do you consider yourself? Are you a bassist, a guitarist?
Or yeah.
Just, what are you?
Yeah, I'm a bass player, for sure.
At your core, you're a bass player.
Yeah, the double neck, I mean, I'm probably best known as the double neck guy from Ocean's 11, which is funny because I'm really not a guitar player. I mean, I got the double neck and figured out how to do some stuff on the guitar and also do stuff on the guitar and the bass simultaneously that works for Elton 11. But if someone wanted to hire me as a guitar player for a session, I'd have to turn them down. I'd say, no, I'm not a guitar player. I'm a bass player. And this latest record, Fast Forward, there's no double neck on it.
It's okay.
A fretless bass and a 6-string bass.
Wow.
So I've kind of hung the double neck up for a while. I mean, not live. Live, I use it.
Now let's take it one step further. Do you play the bass like a guitar, or do you play the guitar like a bass?
That's a good question. it's a little bit of everything. I play the bass like a bass. I play the bass like a guitar. I play the bass like a keyboard. I mean, with a two-piece band, there's a lot of sonic territory I need to cover to make the song interesting, at least in my opinion. So I'm pulling out every technique I can think of. I mean, I'm using an Ebow on the bass.
Oh, yeah.
Really unusual. You know, different stuff like that. And like we said earlier, a lot of effects. So a little bit of everything, I guess.
I got to know also, are there any other two pieces that you have out there that are like a favorite of yours? And just in general, who are some other bands you find yourself curious about or excited about?
You know, the bummer about having done this for so long, even before I was in Elton 11, I've been in bands forever. I've had 7 record deals, I just realized the other day.
Wow.
So I've been doing this a long time, and it's made me kind of jaded and cynical, which is horrible. I don't want to be that way, but usually when somebody tells me, oh, you got to check out this band so-and-so, I usually go and check them out, and I just kind of shrug my shoulders. And I think, I've already heard that before.
Yeah.
And I hate being like that. I would imagine it's like being a movie critic. You know, if you're seeing a couple movies every day and writing about it, man, it's tough to be impressed.
Right.
So that's where I am. But to try to answer your question, I think it's situations like these where I usually ask you guys to tell me somebody I should listen to.
As a two-piece?
What have you guys been playing on your show that you're really?
Man. Well, we had Victor Wooten on not too long ago, and I'm sure you're familiar with him. It's tough to come by the two pieces. You have, Death from Above 1970. You probably heard all the ones I know anyway.
Yeah, Death from Above. So those guys are one of the ones who, when I first heard them, I thought, oh yes, new favorite band.
Yeah,
but then I realized, and I'm sorry if I sound mean, but that they're a little bit of a one-trick pony. And after a while, I got a little bored of the trick, to be honest.
You know, we are so excited to have you here on the 17th. When you come to Chicago, I'm sure you've been here a lot. So what do you like to do when you're away from the stage?
Oh, in Chicago?
Yeah.
I usually like to sleep.
Sure.
I like naps.
Yeah. That's a favorite of mine, too.
That's the thing, again, like having done this for so long. A lot of the amazing cities like Chicago, and Chicago literally is one of my favorite cities in the country, but we've been enough times. The first time that you go to a city like Chicago, you think, okay, I got to go out. I got to go see everything or as much as I can, and I have one day to do it because I'm on tour, and you get exhausted running around. When you get there for the, you know, 17th time or whatever, you think, okay, I'm really tired. I want to go out, but I think maybe I'm going to take a nap.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that being said, honestly, one of my favorite things to do in Chicago is eat. Oh God, yeah. You guys have good food.
Oh, yeah.
Man. And it's just fun walking around the city. You know, we usually end up in an area like Wicker Park or something because that's kind of where the artsy areas and clubs and whatnot seem to be. And I just wandering around, just the energy of that city is phenomenal. I love it. I would live there if I had a reason to be honest.
Well, we are more than happy to oblige you by that if you wanted to. Evanston's a great place, too. Space is an awesome place, and I know that they have really good food as well. So on February 17th.
Yeah, Christian, thank you so much for joining us today, and good luck on the tour here. And, come say hi next time.
All right, thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely.
Can't get enough of Sound Sessions? Like our Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter @SoundSeshPod and check us out on Instagram @SoundSessionsWGN.